Welcome to the March meeting of the March 2016 meeting of the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. And with that, Andrea, can you give us the roll call?
Chairman Alfred.
Here.
Member Waggy.
Here.
Member Lee.
Here.
Member Gehring.
Here.
Member Ikeda. Mr. Hutchinson?
And Andrea, I think that you had mentioned to me that we have a slight change in the ordering of our agenda items today.
We do. We'd like to move item 5B, declaration of surplus water, down to item 8. We'll make it 8C under action items for Board of Supervisors. That's because the item is actually making a recommendation that the Board of Supervisors approve.
Eight C, yes.
So 5B is now 8C.
This is time for public comment on items not on the agenda. And seeing none, we'll move to item 3, approval of the minutes for January 21st, 2016.
I move approval with one slight modification.
Okay. Any public comment? Seeing no public comment, so you're...
Mr. Chair, I did have a comment on that.
First, Jeff, what was the... We don't have a second, but let's talk.
I'll second it then in discussion.
For discussion. We'll,
somewhere my name was had a T added to it.
Oh, I did see that. So we will find that and correct Mr. Lee's. Yeah, it's on page 4 of 31. The 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph.
Oh, I see, Mr. Lee.
Yeah, second line from the bottom. So that will be corrected. And then Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I wanted to mention was that you'll recall there was some discussion over the issue of the $30,000 for the culvert replacement on state
yes.
property. And that item was brought to us under the premise that it was somewhat of an emergency item, that we didn't have time to go to TAC and we didn't have time to go through normal budgeting items because of the looming El Nino and threat to flooding for in Oceano if that didn't get done. I just thought I'd mention that I walked by there today, and so far nothing's been done.
And I do recall the conversation consistently with how you also recall the con. So you don't have a change to the minutes, but I...
No.
Okay.
Just a comment.
So we have a motion and a second with a slight amendment to the minutes. Any further discussion? And hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And hearing none, the motion passes. With that, item 4, operations report.
Okay, I'll be giving that this evening. So to date, we have 467.94 acre feet for lake elevation. Our storage is at 14,611. That's 30% capacity, which is about 1% to 2% higher than January. We have 18.65 inches of rainfall to date. Our plant production is 2.4 MGD. Our filter turbidity range is 0.01 to 0.03. And our downstream release is 1.8 MGD. And our state water is 1.28 MGD.
Any questions? I just had one observation, and it's sort of a request then, because over the last week with the rainfall and everything, I've been getting on slowcountywater.org to see how the reservoirs have been responding. And, you know, good information with the graph. My hope is that we might be able to have something slightly modified on the web. The water surface elevations right now from Lopez show, you know, 465 feet, 467 feet. Is there a chance that maybe an additional Y legend could show what that percentage is then? So I just provide a handout and send it over to you.
Okay.
Because it'd be nice to be able to track it in terms of percentages, how full it is on a percentage basis, as well as the elevation. And seems like that might be possible.
I think that's an option on that site. I think there's a button you got to click to go from percent to
2 foot,
2 acre footage.
All right.
Might check that.
Thank you.
I'm just going to comment to Mr. Chairman that Mark mentioned, I noticed, I just looked it up too, that state water deliveries have increased to 45%.
Yes.
So that gives the county a whole lot more water to available. Thank you.
Yes, for the record, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director. We received notice early this afternoon that state water deliveries are 45%, which would bring 45% of 25,000 is 11,250 acre feet available to county subcontractors who have contracts at 4830. So for this year, that's 6,420 acre feet of additional Table A supplies in addition to what we have in storage. County staff's already initiated conversations with CCWA, Central Coast Water Authority, in Santa Barbara County regarding opportunities to share that water in some sort of an exchange so that we could make additional amounts available to state water customers and also any other agency with access to a state water pipeline in San Luis Obispo County for drought relief.
And to add to that, at the last Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee, the discussion also ensued on that. But the Board of Supervisors study session for the options in the extended drought was earlier this month. State water was discussed there and how might we be able to maximize deliveries. So it went back to the TAC, and the TAC didn't take any action, but was interested in how that might work. So as Mr. Hutchinson explained, county staff has followed up with CCWA, and then in April there's going to be a state water advisory committee meeting to further address that possibility.
I guess I think the operative point is that, as Mr. Hutchinson just mentioned, there might be opportunities to provide water to non-state water contractor recipients. So we might get into that more later when we talk about some of the other items here.
I think it's a little bit of an evolving issue because the discussions with CCWA and the state water contractors have to occur. But the precedent has been set in terms of involvement with CCWA because in a prior, much smaller drought, Governor Schwarzenegger had declared an emergency, and the Department of Water Resources did allow for some additional options in transferring water during a declared emergency. So that paperwork on what was allowable previously needs to be brought up in case it can be, used again in this situation. Any other questions, comments on the operations report? Public comment? Hearing none. Moving on to the item five's informational items. And the second quarter fiscal year 15-16 budget status report. And Ms. Hilker.
Good evening. I'm Joanne Hilker with the Public Works Department.
Right about down here.
Okay, thanks. Joanne Hilker with the Department of Public Works and Finance Division, and I'm here to present the second quarter budget status report for Flood Control Zone 3. In your packets is the fiscal year 15-16 second quarter report, so that is through December 31st of 2015. And at 50% of the fiscal year, the Zone 3 expenses totaled 42% of the annual budget. In your packet, there are three graphs reflecting the second quarter budget versus actual expenditures, and they're in three categories. The first category is routine operations and maintenance. In that category, at 50% of the fiscal year, expenditures were about 47% of budget, which produced about a $90,000 worth of savings. Those savings were primarily due to staff vacancies, which are in the process of being filled. So the water treatment plant experienced about $50,000 in staff savings, Terminal Dam about 14,000 and Main Dam about 10,000. The second graph shows non-routine operation and maintenance. In that category, at 50% of the fiscal year, expenditures were approximately 32% of budget, resulting in about 99,000 of savings. The majority of those savings was realized in the Lopez Water Rights Habitat Conservation Plan, and those are further described in the quarterly report. Any savings, however, in specifically to that HCP are rolled into the next year for continued efforts. Those are not savings that are realized at year end. And the third graph represents capital outlay. Again, at 50% of the fiscal year, expenditures were about 29% of budget, resulting in 106,000 of savings at that time. And again, in this category, any year-end savings are on active projects are rolled into the next fiscal year for continued efforts. And Mark Hutchinson is here and is going to provide a status update on the capital outlay projects. All agencies are current on their payments, and this concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
No.
From the public? Seeing none. Thanks, Joanne. So item 5B has been moved. So item 5C, projected reservoir levels.
So Jill Ogren usually gives us update. There are some graphs included in the packet.
Looks like that's around page 19.
Page 19, that's correct.
Do you guys have members have the colored version
yes.
of the reservoir thing? So just very quickly, the green line trending from left to right, the solid green line is actual reservoir elevations from December 1st, 2014, up to March 1st, 2 weeks ago. It ends at 14,215. We know we're slightly above that. The red outline bars across the graph our actual rainfall at Lopez. And then the corresponding blue columns are a 10-year average rainfall prediction. We use that to predict the dashed green line, which shows how the reservoir had responded in the past to those amounts. The solid orangish line, if we have a March rainfall equivalent to 1991, the miracle March, how did the reservoir respond? And then the dashed red line, which plunges down to 10,000 acre feet before September 1st, is if the drought over the past 4 years continues in March and April as it has. So you can see there's quite a range of predictions there, ending up November 1st at the end of summer, somewhere in the 14,000 plus acre foot on the dashed green line down to perhaps 13 or perhaps hitting 10,000 acre feet before September, and 10,000 being the next step down in the low reservoir response plan, and 6,000 acre feet above the planning level minimum pool of 4,000. Although, as you know, we are investigating the 4,000 acre feet to see to essentially refine that number. And that work effort would be triggered at the 10,000 foot level because at that point it would be critically important if it's 4,000 or 3,000 or exactly what that number is. So we would implement that analysis and the costs associated with it if we hit 10,000 acre feet, along with some other engineering work at the treatment plant to enable it to run at less than its current minimum daily output. Those are sort of considered extreme drought measures. But so we're working with these projections. This is the table. This is one of the charts that the TAC uses every month to make their recommendations on adaptive management to your advisory committee. And I'm sure the TAC is looking closely at this and watching the weather in the reservoir. Because of the date that we potentially might hit the 10,000 acre foot level, I would just remind the committee that last April, we were above 15,000 acre feet. The TAC correctly predicted that we were going to hit that trigger on the LRRP halfway through the water year, which reduces our municipal deliveries down to contracts amounts at that point. So they made a decision to recommend to your committee, and your committee implemented adaptive management to, in effect, take that hit at the beginning of the water year so that we wouldn't have ground to make up for the second half. And the TAC will be going through that, likely that same kind of analysis in April as we move out of the wet season.
Mark, would you anticipate then that the advisory committee would be considering the TAC's recommendations at the May meeting?
Potentially. As luck would have it, Mr. Lindsay, the local meteorologist, is predicting potential for a wet April. Which is a good thing, but keeps TAC members up at night trying to figure out how in the world to make recommendations based on that kind of a prediction. So we'll just have to see where the direction goes. Obviously, the individual member agencies will also have to make some decisions about how they approach their water management in advance of the advisory committee making a recommendation or implementing a reduction in municipal deliveries. And then, of course, as we've already talked, the potential for bringing in new water from state water will come into that same conversation.
Any questions?
Well, just more of a comment. I guess the bottom line is Mr. English, the Arroyo Grande engineer, was mentioning before the meeting that, you know, people are reading stories that lots of rain and all that stuff, and people might let off their conservation efforts. And I think the message right now is the lake has not responded like the Northern California reservoirs has. We haven't had that much rain to bring it up to where we'd like to see it, so we're still in a conservation mode, and this, the governor's order on conservation still stands, so we still need to conserve water across the board, I guess, is the message.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
I had made this comment at the TAC, too, that it looks funny when you see that yellow line actually go, but the yellow line is supposed to be a miracle march. Mm. It actually goes below the green line. And it was explained to me the reason it goes below that is because that miracle march is with no additional rainfall, that yellow line, after March. That's why it goes below the green one.
Okay. Any others? Public? Hearing none. Climate update.
That's yours, I think.
Kind of covered a little bit, but anything to add?
So I'm glad to hear that Mr. Lindsay's predicting rain for April because we haven't gotten too much for March. I went ahead and put these maps on slides this time so it would make it easier to see them in color. So what I wanted to point out is that March 2016 looks very similar to February of last year. Although the Central Coast is still in extreme drought, Northern California has now been upgraded, and as well as Southern California and Southeastern California to moderate to severe drought. So California overall seems to be improving in regards to the drought, but obviously we're still in a drought. And then for our temperature forecast, in January when we last met, Noah was predicting kind of equal chance of above or below normal temperatures, whereas now for March we're looking at above normal temperatures. And then the precipitation forecast for March looks very wet compared to January, and we've still got another week and a half, so maybe we'll see some more rain, and I know that there might be a chance for rain this Sunday and Monday. So hope for the best. Any questions?
Next item is the PG&E Diablo Canyon Power Plant Desalination Update.
So this will be discussed at the Board of Supervisors meeting on March 22nd, as you're probably aware of, and I know your agency submitted letters for that item as well.
And I pulled up the staff report and the materials today and read through it. Is there, do you know if there's any anticipated timing on responses from all the local agencies? Part of the direction was to further coordinate with the Zone 3 agencies before moving into additional, like the CEQA and the other phases. It seemed like the recommendation, including a lot of others, was to appropriate $900,000, I believe.
Yes.
And then it seemed to me that the idea was then if the local agencies at least sign up for that planning effort, then the flood control district would be reimbursed from all of us for those $900,000.
The concept there, well, backing up, there's three key recommendations. One is a budget adjustment for a planning phase budget of $900,000, which includes staff from Public Works and the planning department on the CEQA side, a CEQA EIR consultant, and engineering support for that. Another recommendation is to prepare a notice of preparation, scope, request for proposals, and identify a preferred CEQA consultant. The third would be to negotiate a water supply agreement with PG&E, the general terms being a term to match predicted financing for the project, so 20 or 30 years, again, in consultation with the Zone 3 agencies, and talk about water supply and whatnot. I think if the board makes that direction, there'll be some serious conversations with the entities that have expressed interest. It was initially conceived that we needed PG&E to commit to providing water for the 20 or 30 year financing period, and if they weren't able to at least pay off the bonds. The problem with that is I think the agencies would rather have the water than the money. So we're going to have some serious conversations with the individual Zone 3 agencies about how we might structure that approach. The third part is the concept of a conditional reimbursement agreement with each of the participating agencies. The idea being that as the project moves forward and in a year or two, if we're able to obtain a coastal development permit, and an agency that came in at the front for, say, 20% of the water decides at that point to leave the project, the district would expect reimbursement of their share of the cost at that point. What has happened in other projects is the district has borne that cost typically up to the EIR being done, and then added those costs into the future project with agreements that have an opt-out provision for, should the project come in, providing less water or substantially more cost, those sorts of things. However, we're having worked with management and our accounting staff, the district is looking at some very high costs, tapping into the district reserve funds related to SGMA and groundwater and some of the IRWM requirements. So we're having to be a bit more conservative with those funds. But that's open for discussion at the Board of Supervisors and looking for direction on how we should best proceed. And the details are also important. So that being said, then the idea would be that the next board hearing would be staff coming back with conditional reimbursement agreements, a signed water supply agreement from PG&E, and an environmental consulting contract. Bring that package back to the board, and then they would decide whether to move ahead with attempting to gain the coastal development permit.
And so let's see if I can sort of restate the fiscal implications. And I think that was consistent with how the Nacimiento project was developed, that those who were interested had to obligate themselves for those upfront planning dollars that included CEQA, and then if they chose not to participate in the project ultimately, they basically didn't get you pay for the planning and then you make the decision whether you also participate in project implementation. Sounds like that's the similarity in the approach. How does the department anticipate reaching out to all the different Zone 3 agencies then? Through the TAC first, or?
I think probably initially through the TAC, but when it comes time to making individual agreements, we would certainly talk with each agency's management and their finance staff, of course, to come up with something that works for everyone.
Okay, so, and, you know, clearly the cost implications are pretty significant from what I read in the staff report today.
Yeah, we've, I believe, best case scenario, 1,300 acre feet of water, a capital cost of around $30 million. Yeah. And with a state revolving fund financing currently at 1.6% at 20 years, works out to about $2,800 to $3,300 an acre foot for delivered water. That includes a range of $1,000 to $1,500 purchase price from PG&E. Right now, we have a contract to purchase emergency water, so non-potable at the plant, for $1,026 an acre foot, which PG&E believes is their current cost to produce the water. They are going through their own process, including an RFP to upgrade, potentially expand or modify their desalination facility. So they don't have, at least to date, exact numbers for us as to what kind of water costs might be involved in production. Mm-hmm. Their numbers also include obtaining what they call a tariff, meaning they're able to supply electricity to the plant at their cost, which is a significant savings, meaning they would not be buying it off the grid like your typical customer. That's important when we compare it to the facility in Carlsbad, the Poseidon plant. Although it's actually attached to an existing power plant, it buys electricity off the grid. They don't get a break on their power supply. And as you know, in desal, that's one of the major costs is energy costs. So one of the questions for PG&E is trying to look 20 years into the future, and no one has a crystal ball on whether the plant will run or not, whether or not the tariff would remain, whether the PUC would even entertain it in the first place.
Are there other questions or comments?
You said there was a fourth recommendation. You said three, and then you said, oh, four. So what was the fourth one?
Proceed with the CEQA work up to signing the contract, water supply agreement with PG&E, conditional reimbursement agreement, and budget adjustment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, it certainly, you know, there's been a lot of good progress on it. I think it's going to take some time for all the agencies to really get their heads around whether or not they want to move forward. We have limited options, obviously, but there's a big price tag associated with that one as well.
Certainly, and we know then there's reclamation projects are in play.
Yeah.
And although we know from the board presentation in February that it would be preferable, looking at the amount of water that those projects supply, to have both of them come along. But we'll have to have some technical and detailed discussions about whether that's feasible cost-wise moving ahead. We have, I should tell the committee, we have moved forward based on discussion at the TAC very logically with the concept on desal that if it is an emergency-only facility, that is, we can only run the plant, say, per a coastal permit condition during bona fide emergencies, then it is simply not a feasible project. To spend $30 million out of all of your water supply budgets for water that only comes in certain undefined situations is just really not something we believe we can move ahead with. And that was was a very short and succinct discussion at the TAC, and a lot of heads nodding, absolutely.
Jeff.
One last question with regards to, and I haven't read the staff report yet, so is there a time frame for delivery under the best case scenario of the water?
Oh, that. The problem is this thing called the coastal development permit. Mr. Ogren can attest that even for projects that the Coastal Commission is solidly behind and fully supports, say a very complicated and expensive water quality project in a coastal community called Los Osos, the Commission's timeframes are just very, very long. And admittedly, right now, we don't quite have a good understanding of what direction the Coastal Commission is taking on application of the regulations or timeframes on major projects.
So under best case, we could be 5-10 years out.
Oh, best case, 2 years, but.
Okay.
Yeah, making predictions about how fast the commission is able to work. Remember, this is the state has adopted amendments to the California Ocean Plan, State Water Resources Control Board. And if you pull up the board's agenda, we actually included those amendments. It's rather long, but it is in the staff report. And the amendments are specific to desal plants. And they focus very much on the intakes and the brine discharge in the ocean. And very much encourage subsurface intakes, which is not possible at Diablo Canyon. The existing is not, and it's a rocky shore. And they're looking for brine dispersement facilities. Now, at Diablo, because the brine goes into the ocean cooling loop, which is millions of gallons a day, it's not actually measurable. But there needs to be some analysis, and I'm sure Coastal Commission would require, if the plant were to shut down, then what's the throughput in the ocean cooling loop? What percentage of that would be brine from our desal plant? And what would those effects be? On the other hand, it is an existing facility. And that's not taken into account necessarily in the ocean plan amendment, other than to say as somebody who dealt with this has been dealing with it for about 16 years, I would note that when you read the ocean plan amendments, and I pointed out to some PG&E reps, the definition of existing facility would not apply to this expansion of their plan. And the ocean plan amendment also is an amazing example of how to write very detailed multi-page regulations that I think the agency could point to support whatever decision they want to make in the end. It was explained to me about the existing facility idea that perhaps buying a brand new Prius is more environmentally friendly than putting new tires on your Chevrolet. I'm thinking they meant Diablo's desal as a Chevrolet. On the other hand, there's an environmental effect of building a new Prius. So you expand an existing desal plant or build a new desal plant. Exactly which one has the greater environmental impact and is preferable. That is going to be one of the challenges for the agencies on this one.
One of the issues I raised with PG&E when we were discussing it, we took a tour out to our city, some of our city folks went out to the plant, and they said they would be running their discharge for some time after shutdown because you have a various system still need that. They require cooling, a spent fuel pool in other places for some time in the core. So you wouldn't, upon shutdown, you just wouldn't stop that circulation. It would take a while before they would shut that off. But still, if it requires a separate process, it sounds like it's a lot more than we already have it because it's there. They're not going to accept that.
Right. Not sure.
Okay. Well, it's imponderable, I guess.
Well, Mark, and you made the statement, too, that from sort of a water supply reliability standpoint, both reclaimed water and the Diablo water would be desirable. With Diablo, you know, my thoughts are it would be helping to firm up the reliability of our surface water supplies, and reclaimed water helping to firm up the reliability of our groundwater supplies. You know, with the cost implications of both, it's a little bit hard to imagine that we can actually do both. Those decisions are going to, you know, come down the road. But I think the really good thing that's happening right now is that both of those options are really being fully investigated, so that when everybody who has to make decisions has to then answer to the public, we have really good information on both options, and really appreciate what the department has been doing with the Diablo option. Any other comments, questions? Public? Nope. And our final update then is, oh, we do, Mr. English. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff English, Public Works Director, City of Rio Grande. And I just want to confirm, not having read the staff report, that there's no expectation that the agencies participate or attend. At this point, we wouldn't have time to go to our governing bodies to get any kind of support or recommendations regarding that staff report. So I want to just confirm that there's no expectation there, and we do want to monitor this, obviously. And our expectation is that this would be moved forward as a permanent source of supply as opposed to an emergency source as well. And so if there is some expectation for us to participate, please let us know as soon as possible.
Yeah, I would add for the record that the recommendation and the description of the conditional reimbursement agreement is broad, and the expectation is that the board, if they believe that something like that is what they want to see, that they would send staff out to go work with our partners and find out what's reasonable and feasible, and then bring them back a recommendation, a package, if you will, that works for everybody, rather than go in the front end with all the details and percentages and financing and all that.
I just want to comment too, this kind of somewhat related to this. I was reading some long-term El Nino, La Nina forecast issues, and we could be in for a strong La Nina next year, which could have effect of reducing our water, our rainfall. So, you know, we're all, California's an area where we're always going to have periods of more rain, less rain, and I think that's why we're here, to try to get through this current drought, but there will be future droughts too. Thank you.
I think that's a really good point, because when we have these two good supply options available to us now, and with fiscal implications on both, I would hope that we don't say, you know, one and not the other. If one, it becomes the higher priority and we move forward with that one sooner, I think we always have to keep the other option, you know, on the table as well, because the next drought is going to happen. We're still seeing population increases and other increases in demand for water. Point well taken. And so, Jeff, I agree that I hadn't seen any sort of formal participation from the agencies. I was going to sit in and observe on Tuesday just to get a good flavor for what the board discussion is, and then report back to the TAC on that. And without any other further comments or questions, our last informational update is the Habitat Conservation Plan update.
It's always fun to talk about stuff that's not necessarily in the staff report. You notice in the staff report, it says that work on the draft downstream release program and coordination with the resource agencies is on hold, pending more information about the water supply contracts, which seems like a odd connection. As your committee may recall, we set out with this new consultant team to power through the HCP, and they're actually on schedule. So we've unfortunately had to put up the red flag and tell the consultant and the staff team, stop, you've done a great job. They have a draft downstream release program ready to go talk to agencies, but That release program, like all the previous ones, is predicated on the idea that surplus water would be available for downstream needs. So it's based on an average of 4,200 acre feet a year. One of the things we were poised to do was then go back historically and figure out how much surplus water had actually been used in the municipalities, and then see what the difference was and perhaps run a downstream release program that generated surplus for municipalities, and then see kind of what the timing was and when that would be available and how it affected storage. But at the same time, as you know, the agencies are looking at contract changes, which have their roots in the idea that we need to manage LOPEZ as part of the whole portfolio for each agency. Those LOPEZ contracts, as they're written, and surplus is a good illustration, are really written in isolation from the other sources, from groundwater, from state water, from the variability of those, from drought. They date from the 1960s when, you know, there was no state water, and groundwater wasn't a particularly huge issue because LOPEZ was coming on. So surplus water, to illustrate, is a one-year savings plan. You can take last year's surplus and use it this year. If you don't use it, it stays in the reservoir. It's not in your account. So that forces agencies to plan for LOPEZ for one year and then work everything else around. So the idea of modifying those contracts into more of a storage model, so an agency with multiple sources could, say, store water in LOPEZ year over year, keep their stored water, not use their entitlement, not lose their water. They have a savings account. Because maybe there's been a series of wet year, groundwater's high, that's cheaper. Rather than let that go out to sea, it makes more sense to have a savings account, use this source, maybe an agency with state water, same kind of thing going on. Well, the issue there is doing these now expensive HCP model runs based on a year-over-year surplus storage that we're intending to modify is not the most efficient use of funds. At the same time, because we have the reservoir model developed for the HCP, and this was intentional, we can use that model to test different kinds of contract amendments and see how it would have played out over past years. So we've had that conversation at the TAC, and folks are mulling that over. We've asked the consultant E-Corp to give us some thoughts, since they have quite a bit of experience with these kinds of things, forward us some of the different contract approaches that they've seen around, and then give us a sense of what it would cost to apply those to LOPEZ and give us some model runs so that the TAC members and then your committee could look at how those things play out. So we're intending to keep those folks working and use the tools, but bring the HCP and the contract amendments together, and then see if we can move forward something that works better for both sides of that coin.
Well, I know it's getting a lot more complicated with all these deals we're working on to stretch our water supply. And I recall one thing I raised previously is, like, when Pismo Beach has some state water stored in LOPEZ, then would that amount of water be included in the downstream release calculation? I think you indicated it would not be. It's in a separate category. So I realize things are getting a little more complicated because of all the...
They seem that they always do. The other, and it's not difficult to calculate or modify. The HCP also has some downstream release scenarios that are predicated on reservoir levels, on the assumption that the reservoir level is a good reflection of the past 3 to 5 years of the climate, so that it reflects what's really been happening, and we can use that as the gauge to try to recreate natural conditions. Of course, if we go to a storage model, that wouldn't be true, but we can get the same information off of inflow numbers. But it would need to be presented that way. It's quite possible, I suppose. Well, it's theoretically possible that we could have a reservoir with 40,000 acre feet of storage after 2 years of extreme drought, just because we were relying on other sources, and you wouldn't want to be releasing water as if it was an El Nino. And simulating wet conditions in the stream and fooling the fish, that's never good. We don't want to do that, and we don't want to use the water to do that. So That one's not particularly difficult, but it's time to bring everything together. And it's possible that through some contract mods and a reservoir model, we might come out better all the way around. I should point out, too, that, as you know, the HCP has triggered a discussion as downstream water rights. We traditionally in the reservoir store water in the summer and release it downstream in the winter for agriculture. And the reservoir has been operated that way for decades. Little did we know that whatever we store in the winter and release it in the summer, the district and then the users of the water are obligated to report that rediversion to the state. So we've been meeting with the farmers about how in the world we're going to accomplish that goal. And in the middle of it, the state passed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, which, although the Santa Maria Basin is exempt because it's adjudicated, the Rio Grande Valley, Pismo Valley, Napomo Valley, Santa Maria Bluffs, and Cuyama River Valley are outside the adjudicated area. So there's another idea tossed in. And I might add that in the Rio Grande Valley, the groundwater levels, well, we manage the groundwater through releases from the dam. So there's nearly a one-to-one connection. So we'll pull all of that together, probably in a plan with more acronyms than anyone could ever imagine.
I guess I appreciate the complexity you're now faced with, so I appreciate your explanation of trying to make all this stuff happen.
I think really the big challenge is that when we try to pull these things together and work with the TAC members, everyone in the agencies is, and Jeff could attest to this, their plates are full. We can't just turn these over overnight simply because of the drought and everything else that's going on. So there needs to be some patience and priority setting for that. But I think with some information from E-Corp is foundational, and concepts among the subcontractors that have already been discussed, we can start moving forward towards a new model.
The only one I have, Mark, is that you had mentioned developing some scenarios with E-Corp. And have those scenarios been identified? Or are they going to be reviewed by the TAC for, like, concurrence on, yeah, these are the good scenarios to try to run the model with?
Yeah, those we'll bring those to the TAC. The one that we had in mind was the adjust the total downstream to match surplus used over time. Actually, the idea would have been first, what's the surplus used, and then do we want to tinker with that number before we then run some models? But I think what we want to do is get the info from E-Corp about other agencies and their reservoir contracts and downstream release models, especially the ones they find that are similar to our situation.
Okay, and then define the scenarios,
yeah.
get concurrence on them, and then do the modeling runs.
Right. Now, of course, the project managers have looked at me from a budget thing, and I've had to admit, yes, this would not be within the HC budget. It's probably a contract amendment of some sort. So we also want to understand the cost before we get too far into it.
Well, it's important because we have to move to multi-year, you know, planning strategies from these single-year strategies that have previously existed. And there's also important because of, you know, the local agriculture, and I'm under the understanding that you're all pretty well engaged in this process as well. So,
yes.
Very good. Any comments from the public? And hearing no more, item 6, capital projects update.
Okay. I have all kinds of notes on this. First off, quickly to the memorandum to give you a sense of where we're at. The 6 rack addition, my understanding is the contractor is constructing the rack. They're working at the plant. They've sawed up concrete and put in pipes and that sort of thing. We'll skip that second black bullet for the moment about foreign debris in the membrane feed line. The turnout SCADA project is coming to completion. We estimate that to be up and running in May. The repair projects for 15-16 have not started. None of those projects on that list, primarily due to staffing issues within the Public Works Department. We've had to move some key positions around to support a host of new responsibilities that the department picked up unexpectedly after the past 3 or 4 months, and we're on the front edge of the baby boomers heading out the door. So in a constant, recruitment mode. And we had already planned to defer the parking lot resurfacing. So back up to the sixth rack addition with Paul Corporation at the plant and working along with Cushman in installing the new membranes, noticed some issues with foreign debris in the membrane feed line and investigated that and discovered some significant deterioration of what's called the membrane strainers, which is filters upstream of the membranes to keep the debris out of the membrane. The membranes are very fine filters, so there's filters upstream, and we've discovered that the strainers themselves have deteriorated just in the life of the plant and let stuff pass through, which runs the risk of damaging the membranes. At the same time, the Paul representative said, by the way, you know, those PLCs, one on each of your racks, so there's five, are obsolete. You really ought to replace those. We had scheduled that for next year at a quoted price, which apparently did not include programming services, so we're frowning about that one. And then we've recently had a failure in the coagulant feed alarm system. So what's happening now is we have experts on their way out, consultants to investigate this coagulant feed alarm. That's the number one important issue, because that's very important at the front end of the plant and the way it treats the water. To devise a solution for that, we've had two system failures in about a 9-month period. We want to know why that's happening. If you get the alarm and there's not someone at the plant, you can end up with reportable water treatment issues that we have to go out to your agencies and say we may have delivered water that wasn't 100%. It's typically not a health hazard, but it's not the way you want to run the plant. So we've got folks looking at the PLC issue. We've got folks looking at the coagulant alarm system and also this membrane strainer. Again, two of those, the PLCs and the membrane strainer, were budgeted for next year. Joanne and her team in accounting are looking at all of our O&M accounts to see where we're at, and our plan is to be at the TAC next month with some hard numbers and dates and times and figure out whether or not we want to take some of this capital money and O&M money that we didn't spend and get the jump on the membrane projects, whether or not we could potentially defer operating the sixth rack until next year, and then we do these other projects, and then it all operates fine. But then that requires a demobilization and remobilization of the contractor, so there's some extra costs involved with that. So right now, all of this has come up in the last 2 days, so we're going to put some hard numbers on this and get back to the TAC and figure out a way to forge ahead with our timing and our budget available to us. The worst case right now, I guess, is that our projected credits for the O&M budget for the agencies next year, worst case is those drop to nothing, which is not what you were planning on. Again, that's a conversation with the TAC about how to handle that.
This kind of bleeds into the budget discussion, but it sounds like there will be budget implications then, so.
Well, the situation is one of if we have to move budgeted items from next year up into this year, pull out of O&M, and then reduce, you know, every year we typically end up with a credit that the agencies roll forward into next year's billing, and that goes away. So we'll have to have that conversation with the TAC. Okay. And also present the options from an engineering perspective of, well, if we delay this and this, what's that cost? And how does that work with everybody's budgets? We know that we can operate the plant without the six rack because we have since it was built. But it seems like all of these things, about the time you have a
unexpected issue with your remodel project. The water heater broke in the middle of it. That happens at my house. I didn't think it happened to water plants, but apparently it does.
Okay.
Well, it certainly sounds like we've got some serious issues out at the plant.
Well, we're running clean, safe water, and we have been. And, of course, that's the bottom line goal, and that's probably, not probably, that'll be the bottom line for the TAC. We won't defer anything if it puts the water supply at risk, certainly.
Any other questions or comments from the public? And hearing none, no item 7, so now moving to item 8A, the presentation of the proposed fiscal year 16-17 budget and endorsement. And it looks like Ms. Hilker is going to come back
up. I'm going to hand over the mic to Joanne Hilker.
Thanks. As before we get started, as a point of clarification, 8A is the budget as was the draft budget as was previously distributed. In contrast, 8B speaks to district reserves, and I'm assuming 8B hasn't been incorporated into 8A. Two different actions, but if both are endorsed, then that would ultimately affect the presentation of the budget to the Board of Supervisors with whatever the appropriate changes to reserves would be.
Joanne Hilker again, Department of Public Works, Finance. It could, or it could be a mid-year budget adjustment. 8B could be a, depending upon the timing, a mid-year budget adjustment, mid-year even towards the beginning of the year.
Okay, but
could be this year.
First 8A is the...
First 8A.
Yeah, as previously distributed.
Okay, so this is just a very brief presentation on the 2016-17 proposed budget. It's very similar to the last several years that we presented to your committee. I'll briefly review the budget review process and then the budget itself and then questions and answers. So in November and December of 2015, there were a couple meetings with the TAC where the capital outlay projects were identified and prioritized and recommended. And then in January 2016, the proposed budget was distributed to your advisory committee. In February, it was presented to your technical committees for review, or the TAC for review. Also in February, it went to your finance committee, your agency's finance committee, for review. Tonight, we're here to ask for the endorsement of the 16-17 proposed budget. And gaining that, we take this in June to our Board of Supervisors for review and approval. So the overall budget for 16-17 is proposed to increase about 3% from this year's budget. Routine operation and maintenance would be up about 5.7% or almost $190,000. And that's generally due to a once every 3 year or so tule shrub removal effort at the terminal dam. It's almost $48,000. Also due to budgeted increase in utility staff efforts, assuming that we can ramp up our staffing to attend to all the needs that we're being asked to address. And then also at our water quality lab, algae counts at the water treatment plant had a fairly minor increase in cost per treatment, $5,000. And the rest of the increase is associated inflation and overhead. In the non-routine operation and maintenance and capital outlay, combined those two categories went up about 3.3%. Or $23,000. The capital outlay budget is flat at the customary $550,000 per year level. And the non-routine O&M includes increases. The two main increases are for water quality testing software, which is called LIMS at our quality lab. It's about $18,000 and about $14,000 for a shared truck replacement that's needed. Our debt service is projected to remain level until the bonds are paid off in about 2030 or refinanced. And I'll be providing your agencies with an updated five-year plan next month. So labor hours, this is a chart that's been included in the last number of years, just so you can see the labor trends in O&M for the last 10 years or so. You'll see kind of a spike in 2007-08, third column from the left, and that was when the startup of the water treatment plant. And since then, it's been fairly level. The 15-16 projected or annualized is a little bit lower than the last 2 years, but again, that's due to it's not due to our need for staffing. It's just right now we have a lot of vacancies. So that's showing a little bit lower than the last couple of years. So after this budget was distributed, we did issue a budget addendum memo dated February 14, and we distributed it to your advisory committee, the TAC, and the finance committee. And it basically just reduced the direct billings to San Miguelito Mutual Water Company. We had budgeted some work in their direct billings that has already been performed, and so we reworked our numbers and reduced their budget. That revision does not affect in any manner your agency's contracted budget or billings. So this book is still the same numbers for your contracted agencies. And with that, we would ask for your committee's endorsement of our 16-17 proposed budget.
Mr. Lee?
Just had, thank you for that. One question on, I'm not sure what page it is, but it's the purple titled page, mm-hmm. Flood Control Zone 3 Billing Analysis for 16-17 proposed budget. In the capital outlays and reserves, I only see an outlay of $285,000.
So, yeah, the rest of the $550,000 is up in the non-routine categories. Okay. So capital isn't necessarily, it's a mixture of non-routine capital expenses and I can actually show you. I've got another. So right here, this is broken out by billable routine, billable non-routine, and billable capital. There's $265,000 that is right now up in the billable non-routine, and if we were to take those items and plop them down in the capital outlay, we'd arrive at our $550,000.
So it's a kind of a nomenclature of where it hits into the budget, but it's in the 550 of capital reserves.
Yeah, they're
capital
considered
projects.
Capital. I mean, they're by the TAC, they're considered one-time large efforts, but on a financial basis, we don't capitalize them. But they are for the TAC a part of this 550 one-time, you know, annual effort. They're considered large one-time event efforts. So we. It's just a classification in terms of finance versus TAC definitions.
And the recommendations at the TAC and the finance review were?
So those are in those committees, I'm a little bit confused if they actually make a recommendation or if it's a file.
Yeah, I attended both. The both were in support. They didn't, they're not as formal, but both... Both the TAC and the Finance Committee supported the budget.
Thank you.
I just have a question about how many people or who makes up the Finance Committee?
It's basically the finance managers of the agencies.
Okay. And they gave their approval?
Yeah.
And just for the record, too, our finance director said everything looks fine. I mean, city manager and finance director met and went over things and conveyed to me that in my own analysis, such as it is, it looks like everything is pretty much straightforward.
Thank you.
Mr. Gehring?
Is San Miguelito satisfied with the way their billings have been adjusted?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I was in direct contact with them, and yes, they are.
Okay. Thank you.
And that came out through the TAC review?
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. No questions? I'm ready to move forward.
Any questions from the public? No public comment? Without any further discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we endorse the proposed fiscal year 2016-17 budget.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. No further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Do you need a roll call on this?
No. It's okay. not a resolution or anything. So.
Right.
You know, if we had some ayes and some noes, then I'd do a roll
okay.
call. But it sounds like I only heard ayes.
Sorry for interrupting there.
No. Thank you. And thank you, Joanne. Item 8B, Zone 3 District Reserves to fund local match of Stormwater Resource, SWRCB Stormwater Resource Plans Grant.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Hutchinson again. At your last meeting, having Zone 3 provide the local match for a state grant to prepare a stormwater resource plan was discussed, or introduced at least. And the committee, after discussing that, I believe, referred back to the TAC. And also there was an idea of bringing forward the issue of district-funded reserves and the appropriate use for those. So we have to back up a little bit. I think we had that conversation at the last one. There is an account, it's in your budget, called district-funded reserves. This money has been set aside since the year 2000, when the contracts were renegotiated to fund the construction of Lopez Dam. That money represents general property tax collected within the boundaries of Zone 3. A lot of adjustments happened with Prop 13 in 1976. But when the dam was refinanced, a decision was made that increment, so it's, you know, you pay a 1% property tax, a portion of that 1% goes to the flood control district. Money in that category since 2000 is dedicated to assisting with the capital costs and the bond costs of the project. I think it's dedicated towards funding general obligation bonds, something like that. When that decision was made, this segregated account, which again has roots in Prop 13 and was technically available to the district as part of its general fund, there was some $2 million, and that was termed district-funded reserves for the use of projects and issues within Zone 3. The staff report notes there's no legal obligation on part of the district to leave that money for Zone 3, but that's a decision that the board made as a matter of policy. No money has gone into that account since 2000. That fund has been redirected to paying off general obligation bonds or assisting with general obligation bonds. So we've had this money there for 16 years. Just in brief memory, the only ongoing obligation there is that the district made a commitment that should the HCP costs go above a certain amount in any given year, it would come from district-funded reserves and not as billable to the agency, so that your water rates don't, you know, we've had long periods of waiting for federal agencies to do things and whatnot, and it's just been a major expenditure, but not steady. Other than that, it's been discretionary on the part of the board based on recommendations from the advisory committee. In the most recent past, the issue of this Carpenter Creek Bridge came to you, and there was a recommendation to go ahead and fund that. The Board of Supervisors appropriated that money, and the design and permitting folks are moving ahead with that project in conjunction with state parks. There was also a prior recommendation from the TAC to fund a portion of a cloud seeding feasibility study for $10,000. The district was looking for $10,000 from North County interests, and there was to be $10,000 of district, countywide district funding. The North County folks connected to Nacimiento pointed out that the, that reservoir gains in excess of 20 to 30,000 acre feet a year, and since they have first rights to the 17,500, they weren't needing any cloud seeding. So the district has decided to go ahead and do a two-thirds match to that. But this is the first time that $10,000 has been brought to your advisory committee for your consideration. The other two concepts that were discussed at the last TAC meeting was first the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin model. So shifting gears a little bit, the district performed a basin characterization study. The next step is to produce a mathematical model that predicts how the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin would respond to various inputs and outflows. There's a proposal on the table that the district fund one-third, NCMA fund one-third, and Napomo Mesa Management Area and MMA fund one-third. NCMA is in support, and that is all of your Zone 3 agencies except for At-Large Agriculture and CSA 12. Napomo Mesa Management Agency deferred their decision until this latest court action happened, so we'll be going back to them and their new general manager and starting over with that discussion. But there's a proposal that perhaps because this general fund money, general fund reserves, has been setting an account for 16 years that it ought to be put to use in some form. So you see a proposal there to fund up to $250,000 towards the groundwater basin study. And then the more immediate issue is the Rio Grande Creek Watershed Stormwater Resource Plan. This would be a... it's a 50% cost share for a state grant to perform this document called a Stormwater Resource Plan, and there's discussion of what that is, but essentially it's the idea of taking urban runoff and coming up with a plan as to not only how to keep it clean, but also how to use it as a water resource. Those plans will be a required element in the future. If an agency were to look for grant money to do a drainage project or a low-impact development project or something like that, that project would have to be in an contained in an approved stormwater resource plan to be eligible for future grants. So it's documents that all of us will have to write. The district is not in a position staffing-wise and priority-wise to participate at this point on a countywide basis, but the City of Rio Grande has stepped forward and volunteered to be the lead agency on that. The Resource Conservation District would be the project manager and hire and direct a consultant. And the suggestion is that for the application purposes that Zone 3 with these district-funded reserves guarantee the local match. That is in order to make the application, which is due tomorrow, I believe. We had considered doing a special meeting. I think you got that notice. And then the grant application deadline was extended. If your committee determined to go ahead with that, there is a letter at the back of the staff report that also is a support for the grant from the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. Also noted that if using the end of year 2017 numbers, so not this year's budget, but the one you just endorsed, if you look in there at where the reserves stand, we have a policy for this district-funded reserve that it's in two categories. One's called an operating reserve, and it's set at 50% of the annual O&M, which comes out to $1.88 million, something like that. It's not necessarily intended for catastrophic, you know, earthquake repairs, because it would probably be more than that, but it would be available if, well, for instance, if we had equipment failures in the middle of the year or something, we could tap that reserve and avoid raising rates in the middle of the year or something rather drastic like that. There's also a non-operating reserve, which if you dedicated this total of $540,000
to these projects, that other category would still have about $498,000 projected a year in 2016-17, so 2017 in June. Nicole Smith from RCD is here to provide any information about the Stormwater Resource Grant and what that's all about. I would note that we would take this committee's recommendation to the board in anticipation of keeping that recommendation. I had to put some language in there from the bylaws that if county staff was to make a different recommendation, we would notify all of you and have a public hearing so we could discuss what the differences would be. And then when we were talking to Joanne about the budget, we'd have to make a decision as to how to recommend to our board to handle these funds, whether they cancel all the reserves and put it in a special account, and then the county auditor would monitor the outgo, or whether we could go back to the board as the money is needed with individual budget adjustments. Really just a process thing, and we have to figure out which one works best for mostly to make sure everybody is fully informed about where the money's going and when it's going. But really that's the gist of this. You have some $2.5 million in a district funded reserve. It's been there since 2000. It earns interest at the very conservative rate that the county invests its funds at. It also earns rental income, which is not a lot, but a small amount. We have residences at the Lopez plant that staff occupy so that when they're on call and they pay a reduced rent for those, and that money goes into the district funded reserves. And the reason behind that is somewhere in the dark, distant past. But other than that, it's certainly not growing at the rate of inflation, but it's also an important reserve source for various things that might come up in the middle of the year. So there's some decisions to be made about how much should be kept in reserves and how much should be put to use now for the suggested range of ideas that the TAC discussed. I have to leave it to Mr. Gehring, who was there, so whether the TAC endorsed this or put it out as a proposal for your committee to consider. I'm not quite sure how that went.
No, I think they endorsed it.
Yeah. Yeah, they endorse it. Would this be a good time for Ms. Smith to provide an update on the grant application?
Hello, everyone. Nicole Smith with the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District. And we've been working pretty closely with the City of Rio Grande in drafting this grant application, which is due tomorrow. So it's done. It's uploaded, it's ready for your decision. And the application itself is focused on creating the stormwater resource plan for both the Rio Grande Creek and Pismo Creek watersheds. And we've received letters of support from the City of Grover Beach, City of Pismo Beach, Oceano CSD, and of course, the City of Rio Grande is taking the lead. And so all the members of Zone 3 are their city councils have supported the application. The grant request would be for $189,140. That's our budget. So the 50% match would be in that same $189,000 match. The tasks that are actually included in the plan are pretty focused on connecting stormwater management potential with groundwater recharge, with water quality, with flood control, with environmental flows, and just making sure to make the connections really clear, translating that into opportunities and constraints for actual on-the-ground projects, and then prioritizing those projects so that at the end of the plan, you will have a list of prioritized projects that we would then move into an implementation stage. In terms of a timeline, the applications will go in tomorrow. They'll be awarded kind of May, June of this year. And so we would know it's a very quick turnaround time for a grant, but contracts could be underway by June or July of this year. And then that project would go through 2018. So I think with that, if you have any other specific questions.
I just want a clarification for my case, residents of Pismo Beach and the other cities and CSD. The bottom line is this helps us meet our new requirements under the stormwater management program that we all implemented.
Right.
Provides additional strategies and analysis that we can all use.
Right.
So we'll save by doing this jointly with your help, and appreciate Arroyo Grande becoming the project management of it, that this will help us meet our new requirements without individually spending a lot of money to do the same thing.
Right, right. So you are all involved in the Central Coast joint effort for hydro modification and are already spending some amount of money on a tool that's being developed this year.
Right.
This grant will take that tool and make it into a reality for your city and actually, you know, create relative pollutant loading for each of the little catchment basins. Basically, it will meet your phase two requirements for stormwater.
So we'll make it
permits.
Clear that, at least for all of us individually here representing different districts or cities, it helps us meet those new requirements.
Correct.
Because it's required by state law.
Correct.
And just another comment on the use of these funds. I recall there was a court case a few months ago where a judge decided if you weren't using money for an intended purpose, you should give it back. So I think we have to be mindful that these are taxpayer dollars, but we need to use it for a good purpose. I think this satisfies, in my mind, that purpose. And as I say, you know, we shouldn't just hold on to the money. We should, in fact, give it back. We're not going to use it, but for these kinds of things where there's a good purpose for it, I'm fully supportive of it.
Mark, when's the last time that we, before January of this year, that we spent money out of this the reserves like this?
I can't recall, you know, any substantial amount.
Okay.
The only one that came to mind immediately was balancing the HCP costs year over year.
Okay.
And that, at most, would have been $100,000. Something like that.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's my only question.
Mr. Lee?
So, and I appreciate Mr. Waggie's comments and Kristen's comments as well with regards to those. The one question I have, and I'm not sure if it's for who it ends up being for, but at the last advisory committee meeting, we did discuss the appropriate use of these funds and having a further discussion of that. I guess from a question from the SRWB, if we were to say yes to use these funds, and then it was decided, like by say the board at a subsequent action, that they were not available, would we then have an opportunity to come back for an alternate funding source for the match?
I believe so, because you're held to a 50% match and a local 50% match. I don't know where that would come from, but if it could come from another spot, that wouldn't matter. Even when once you're under contract.
Okay, so there's not while if we said yes this evening, the intent probably would be to go forward along with as long as the board says yes. But if we said no, alternately say we said yes this evening, some other decision made that those funds weren't available, we would then need to go find alternate funding.
Right, before you contracted.
Before we contracted.
Or before the city of Arroyo Grande contracted.
Yeah, and that's my understanding as well, versus if we said no today, we would not have the local match identified, and therefore
right.
Nicole could not submit the application.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Comment.
A yes.
Couple of comments, actually. Thinking back to the TAC meeting at which we discussed these district-funded reserves, and what is to be done with them, my recollection and my belief is that, in part, some of us on the TAC thought that given the character of this, what some of us would characterize as a $30,000 raid on these funds for this Carpenter Creek project, maybe we better designate use for these funds that are really, truly involving water supply and or public safety regarding water supply. And so for that reason, I think the TAC came up with a list that obligated all of those funds. At the time, we thought all of those funds that were not necessary for true emergency reserves. But I noticed that Mark's calculations here are a little bit different than the ones we were considering at TAC, and it looks like there's, if I'm reading this correctly, almost $500,000 unallocated.
Yeah, I was looking, if you look in your budget book, there's a page that shows what the reserve balances look like at the end of this year. And the point of it is that the operating reserve is quite a bit more than a 50% typical O&M budget. So the proposal for 16-17 is to balance those numbers. And I think perhaps the TAC was looking at end of this year number, and then when you flip to the end of 17, it's actually a much larger pot, if you will.
With that in mind, I guess the point of my comment is that I don't think the TAC realized that there would still be a $500,000 in round numbers in unallocated district reserves. And I think we ought to go back to the TAC and identify some projects that really do have an effect on water supply and help public health and safety. As an example, and probably one of the best examples, would be the culvert under Orchid Road that drains into the terminal reservoir. Maybe some of you will recall, I guess it's been 20 years ago, the tank car up north of Dunsmuir, California, derailed and put a tank car load of glyphosate into the Sacramento River. Glyphosate is Roundup, a tank car, a railroad tank car. Well, you could have a truck tank have an accident on Orchid Road, and that material, if it's hazardous, would go into the terminal reservoir, and that would endanger and put at hazard the water supply. So I think that that is an example of the kinds of projects that the TAC would likely attach this money to if it had an opportunity to do so.
To add on to what Mr. Gehring is saying, with a former hat that I used to wear, there was actually a project to develop that was funded by Prop 50, and then the state decided to over-allocate the Prop 50 funds. So that project is not quite shovel-ready, but it is design-ready. So there would be some alternates, I think, that that the county could provide to us, so to be able to identify projects for those funds.
I agree with you, Mr. Gehring, and I think that we can probably craft a motion tonight that would accomplish that objective. You used a couple of specific terms that I liked, but I'm hoping you can remember them. You had mentioned water supply or water quality.
Water quality and public safety related water quality issues.
As that's being crafted and written by several people, I just wanted to throw out a little caveat there in that in the last January meeting, we did have the conversation about trying to figure out what these funds were intended for long, long ago. And so, Kristen, I think you brought up a good point. It's like, I think before we craft a motion to that end, I'd like to hear either from the county or someone from a historical past to make sure that we're able to use these funds without concern. I know in the staff report it does say that there's not a legally restricted to use within Zone 3, but I'd like to give county staff an opportunity to sift through the history a little bit more to make sure that there wasn't some, that we're not breaking some unintended use for these.
You want me to take a shot at it, Mark? Because I was intimately involved in the negotiations of the contract revisions at that time. And what happened was, as Mark had mentioned, when the contracts were renegotiated around 2000, which was necessary for the Lopez Dam seismic remediation project, at that point in time, that was the agency's preference, our preference, that every year's tax allocation then be used to reduce our debt burden on the seismic remediation project. And in 2000, that was a really important concept because the state of California had been going through some raids on property taxes in order to redistribute them to other agencies, specifically, you know, school districts. in order to meet, I think it's their Prop 98 obligation of funding of schools. And so a lot of local agencies, you know, didn't like that. And there were some subsequent bills that were passed in order to reduce the state's ability to do that or make the state pay the money back. But in 2000, the only real mechanism to protect the property tax revenues was to get it obligated to debt service. And so that's what we did in 2000, as we said, we have those property tax. If we obligate it to debt service, then that was a contractual debt service commitment, and the state couldn't raid that money and redivert it for other purposes. So we made sure to put it in the contracts to protect it. And then everybody said, well, what are we going to do with the $2 million that's in the bank right now? And it just got set aside because our water supply contracts, you know, all of our agencies have to pay for 100% of the cost. And so the district funded reserves just got set aside in a different, you know, different pool of money and has predominantly just been sitting there with some exceptions to pay for certain unusual costs and reduce the volatility of billing to us. Part of the concept at that point in time, too, was recognizing that with the new burden associated with the cost of the dam and with the new debt burden that was going to be coming in the very near future afterwards in the upgrade of the water treatment plant, that our ability to fund both these increased operating costs as well as our ability to fund reserves or to build up reserves over time in case there's unexpected operating purposes or emergencies, that we're going to have a big increase in cost because of the seismic dam and the water treatment plant, and to put an obligation on us to build up reserves would have been even harder. So that money got set aside in order to be protective for us. And that's really fast forward. That's where we're at today then. But in terms of the ability to, you know, divert it, yeah, there's been, you know, this example of the flood control district, the Board of Supervisors has the ability to move property taxes within the flood control district, has been done on a number of occasions. Zone 9 helped to fund some of the work in Zone 1 and 1A. And so I like the idea of us dedicating it for specific purposes. And even though it's unlikely, I think, from a policy's perspective that the Board of Supervisors would divert this money in a significant way, I'm concerned also, as Mr. Gehring is, about the $30,000 and sort of precedents getting set. And so our recommendations to specifically target this money for purposes, I think, is a wise move at this point in time.
Just my comment from your background on the, you know, if it's a property tax and it's not obligated somewhere, it's kind of like general fund money for the district.
Yeah.
As you pointed out, they could use the money anywhere in the entire county. So I think I agree with you. I'm basically the Mr. Gehring, that if we give TAC the direction to come up with some projects, then we're kind of saying, here's a good use for it to help increase our water supply, increase public safety, and some other good uses for it. I think that would help keep it for our zone.
Yeah. I'll also add that in the 1990s, during budget hardships, there had been a question posed by the then auditor about rediverting some of the flood control district money to the county general fund. My role and capacity at that time, it caused my ears to perk up. And what ended up happening was through legal review, it was determined that the Board of Supervisors of the flood control district could only move money to the Board of Supervisors of the county if they had a finding that there were no unmet needs of the flood control district. Hmm. I don't imagine that they could ever make that finding, you know, considering the water supply, drought, and, you know, flooding issues that we have. But it does point to, you know, the risk sometimes that when we find ourselves in really difficult budget situations, the thought that people will give in terms of, you know, how to access money. And it happens at the local level and it happens at the state level. So again, more where we're identifying where we need to set this money aside, the better off we are.
I appreciate the historical background on that, because that helps. Just seeing that we haven't spent any money before, it's sort of like, oh, well, we're all of a sudden spending some now, and so I want to make sure we look like we're making responsible decisions, but all the dialogue here has been really helpful, and I'm perfectly ready to move forward also with the crafting the motion with the added having the TAC look at the extra projects we could possibly do use some of this money for some good ideas that the TAC has in relation to the public health and safety and the helping the drought as well. So I'm ready to move forward. Thank you.
Okay.
I just had a comment on some of these other items. Besides, I do like the cloud seeding feasibility study portion. It sounds like it's a relatively low cost, perhaps a fairly decent return moving forward, something like that, since Santa Barbara County is already doing it.
We're sort of proceeding on two tracks with that. One is a San Luis Obispo County cloud seeding concept. The other, since Santa Barbara County has a program, Monterey County would like to restart their latent program. We'll also be looking at a joint program amongst all three counties and looking for efficiencies with that. This is just the initial feasibility study.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think if it's determined that it's a feasible thing to go forward with, there's not a lot of new sort of invention of engineering or detail as to how to do it. The companies that are engaged in that, especially through Santa Barbara County, have a very complex and detailed approach to being efficient. I should share that cloud seeding has progressed to almost entirely aerial seeding. Aircraft actually get out in front of the storm offshore and seed the storm at a specific location where it's predicted to carry the raindrop seeds up into the atmosphere and cause rain. So those of us who were looking for a nice ground launch rocket system on top of the dam are going to be disappointed.
I have another question for Ms. Hilker to follow up on the sort of the preface before we got into the budget, but I wanted to, were there any other questions or comments before that?
I'm just going to comment on the cloud seeding portion. As I mentioned, Board of Supervisors, I had a friend who ran a cloud seeding operation in Baja, California, and they achieved some pretty good results down there. But you have to be careful where you do it and how you do it.
You did notice that after the excellent presentation at the board in February from all of the Zone 3 entities, that two of the news outlets' headlines said, County considers cloud seeding.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mark, because really a lot of compliments to Mr. Gehring on leading that presentation with the Board of Supervisors.
Excellent presentation.
Yeah, very good job.
Well done.
So, Joanne, the preface prior to discussing the budget was how these might be incorporated into next year's budget. And so I think part of your response was to not incorporate them as expenditures next year's budget, and that maybe go back mid-year when we know that something is going to proceed. I'm not sure if I'm reading too much into your thoughts, because it would seem to me that in the budget we would want to make sure that the designations are incorporated into the budget, the reserve designations, so that if, let's say, we get cooperation with NMMA in October and we move forward with the groundwater modeling, then if they're designated in reserves, then the board has ability to cancel them, appropriate them, and then move on with the expenditure plan next year.
So, yeah, they are in designated reserves right now, so the board can mid-year appropriate them. I'm more thinking about the timing on this 50% match, because our budget needs to be done by about mid-April, and then, which would precede this item going to our board to commit the 50% match. So I'm not sure. I guess I could put it, actually cancel reserves and move it formally into our 16-17 proposed budget, the 189-140, as a match, and showing it as canceled reserves, and then basically payment to other agency if we're going to be paying the city of AG. I'm not quite sure how this is going
to
work.
Yeah, it would seem to me, as long as in your designations right now are sort of broad brush designations, And so I think what we're looking for is budget notes or something to show that there's specific dollar amounts designated for specific purposes.
Okay.
And I think the reality is the timing of the grant and how long it takes the state to review and actually get grant agreements together, that's not going to be in hand until next fiscal year. And therefore, the agreement that would have to be executed between the county and the city of Arroyo Grande to provide the funding on the match would really happen next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the budgetary actions could be concurrent with that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if the advisory committee, though, supports these types of designations as we figure out what our motion's going to be, just the basic concept that that we're being more specific by dollar amount on the different designations, and that somehow that gets incorporated into the budget process so it's memorialized, and whether those are notes in the flood control district's budget, you know, under zone three or however that's accomplished.
Okay.
Seems
yeah.
like that's important. Okay. The.
And when will we have that list of designated amounts?
Tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Great. Okay.
Hopefully, if we can.
5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
I think we're all ready to wrap it up. Yeah. There's another point, Mark, that in this, on the table where we say not including $1,889,000 in district-funded operating reserves, as Mr. Guerin alluded to, and at the TAC level, we tend to call those emergency reserves. But I think that the nomenclature of operating reserves is the appropriate one, because what we're really talking about is to be able to access those when needed for a significant operational issues, even short of a formal declaration of an emergency. If we call them emergency reserves, then I think the board would be restricted to approving them under an emergency declaration and certain budget adjustments that you can do in emergencies. So I'd like the nomenclature of operating reserves where we know it's for if we have significant unexpected expenditures at the plant and we can access them, get the Board of Supervisors to approve them more expeditiously than if we were to restrict them as truly for only emergencies.
Yeah, that's correct. They had been referred to as emergency, I think, but then in the budget book, it's designated operating reserves, and I think that what we're probably meant to be talking about was small emergencies outside the normal budget, equipment
yeah.
and operating failures and things like that. Just in that things are so expensive in a devastating event, $1.8 million these days doesn't go that far. We did notice that those were segregated in an account that was only accessible at the annual budget. So with this budget cycle, we'll actually work with the auditor to make those set up so that they can be, if
Good.
Necessary, canceled and appropriated mid-year for operating emergencies, if you will, small e, but as an operating reserve.
Policy.
Okay. When we look at the different numbers, though, and Nicole, my understanding is that the actual application is going to call for a match that's far less than the $250,000. It's going to be more in the $189,000 range. And so here's my thought in terms of a motion, and if it makes sense, then I suppose somebody can say they so move, or we can talk about it more. But out of the identified funding levels for cloud seeding, feasibility study, Santa Maria groundwater basin model, and the Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed Storm Water Resource Plan, those are the three we're focusing on because the Carpenter Creek Bridge one has actually already been approved through the committee and through the Board of Supervisors. But those amounts, with an adjustment to the Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed Storm Water Resource Plan to reflect the actual match amount that is incorporated in the grant application. And then however that number causes the $498,729 to go up, and that will go up by, you know, approximately $60,000, that new dollar amount then be dedicated for public safety and water quality purposes. And I think that might accomplish then your objective, Mr. Gehring.
I'm wondering if it could say public safety related to water quality issues.
I like that language.
For the otherwise, water. We might be putting in a stoplight someplace.
Oh, because I used the word and, yeah.
What about water quantity?
Oh, yes. Water resource, I suppose. Can we get water resources in there somehow?
I kind of like water quality and quantity.
Okay.
There you go.
I'll go for that.
For the purposes of discussion, can you just read back the last part of it?
That on our table, however, the $498,729 is modified due to the decrease of the $250 in the Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed Stormwater Resource Plan match, with that number being based on the actual grant application. Mm-hmm. But the balance remaining then would be dedicated in reserves to public safety related to water quality and quantity.
Okay. Just a thought. I like that language. I was just wondering if we need to, or if this encompasses the fact that facility conditioning out at Lopez. I mean, it sounds like it's an 8-year-old plant now, and I'm not aware of any reserves to where at some point we're going to need to replace the plant. So does plant replacement, plant upgrades, does that fall into that language?
It would seem to me it would, because the treatment plan is all about water quality.
Just wanted to confirm.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Second.
I think we need a motion. Someone could say, I so move.
So okay. Moved.
Mr. Lee so moves, and Mr. Gehring seconds.
Yep.
Any further discussion, public comment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We still have one more motion, but I got to ask the question, Mark, because you said if the Public Works Department's recommendations might differ from the advisory committee, then there would have to be a public hearing in the Board of Supervisors. And I already anticipate that public hearing would be part of the budget public hearing. But is there any inkling or discussion within the department of making recommendations that might differ from those of the advisory committee tonight?
Certainly not. Okay. However,
yes,
the Board of Supervisors is on the verge of launching off into a discussion of flood control district funding, including reserves, owing to the drought and some needs to provide cash flow for a significant number of grants that we've gotten over the past few years, the need to fund a reserve for the Los Osos wastewater project as a part of their funding. There's a district loan there. The district has seen its reserves in the past 12 months drop by about half, which is approximately $6 million. The board is also directed staff to bring them back a report on Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and there's some inkling of what is the district's ability to fund that effort. With five basins out there, admittedly two adjudicated, but expenditures going towards both for various odd things. The total of that number over the next 5 years is multi-millions of dollars. So the board will have to be making some hard decisions about what they can fund, what they'll have to look to partners in the community to fund, and how they use their reserves. So your committee's basic concept here, which is to identify exactly what this $2 million needs to be used for, is very timely. I haven't had any direction to do anything different, but it'll be important when the board's looking at all of its reserves to understand what the needs are from the partners that are out there, including Zone 3.
Well, and if they are ever in a position where they have to really look hard at some of the zone funding, then I'm sure I can point them in other directions from Zone 3. But what you're saying is that this is actually a really smart move on our point at this point in time, And if, in fact, any recommendations come forward different, you'll provide us notice in a timely manner, and I'm sure all of our mayors would be very interested in showing up at those budget hearings.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that response. And understanding that, you know, there are a lot of evolving water resource issues throughout the county, I think that, you know, Zone 3 is Zone 3 because of the early efforts of the five cities area to develop water supply projects. You know, Zone 1 and 1A was the first zones, and those were developed for the levees. I believe Zone 2 was the city of Morro Bay at some point in time. It's not a functioning zone anymore. But Zone 3 in, you know, late 1950s and through the 60s recognized, before really other areas of the county, and the importance of developing reliable water supply projects. And in the 1960s, the voters in the area approved Lopez Dam by more than a two-thirds vote, and in 2000 came back again and voted by more than a two-thirds vote in order to support funding. So in reality, I think Zone 3 has been the long-term most responsible of areas within the county to make sure that we've had water resource reliability. And keeping that money for Zone 3 is very important. I think our last recommendation then to consider is the letter of support for the grant application.
Second.
With a motion and a second, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Moving on to future agenda items.
And we do have one more item, declaration of surplus water,
yes,
which is water. Now item 8C. You'll find that on page 15 of your packets.
And that is pretty much consistent with the Lowell Reservoir Response Plan and consistent with last year's actions as well, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I always like to start off the discussion of surplus water because I've been instructed to do so by every member of the TAC at least once. That surplus in terms is a contract term for Zone 3, and it does not mean there's extra water. There's a whole different dictionary for water managers. In this instance, in these contracts, we look at the municipal deliveries from last year as compared to the 4530 in the contracts. We look at the downstream releases as compared to 4200 from the reservoir safe yield. If the difference between those two and what we actually use is a positive number, that is termed surplus water. Per the contracts, the district calculates that and then brings it to your committee for declaration. And then it is offered to the various subcontractors. They have rights, contractual rights, to their entitlement percentage of the surplus, not what they contributed or what downstream contributed. However, and that calculation is in your staff report, the Low Reservoir Response Plan, by agreement with all of the affected agencies, essentially says that each agency will decline its share of surplus, and the district will reallocate it agency by agency based on whatever amount your agency used below its previous year's entitlement, and that the downstream, any saved downstream release saves is kept in the reservoir and not put into those water accounts. So the table that you have on page 16 of 31, or 2 of 3 in this staff report, is the results of all of that calculation. This is, by the way, subject to the final numbers from March, and we've made an estimate in conjunction with the TAC, and the TAC's looked at this very carefully and pointed out some adjustments that needed to be made, so we've made those. So what you see in the unused entitlement in 15-16, so about column 4 over, by agency, is what you used underneath your entitlement. You already had a savings account established when the LRRP was enacted at the end of 2014, and what's not been used there is shown. And then two columns, the below 15,000 acre feet, so where we are now, which is how much each agency would have available to them, and then the below 10,000, which is a 10% reduction on your entitlement number, not on your savings account, what would be available to your agency in water year 15-16, so April through March of next year. And you can see the difference between those numbers by agency is the recommendations that the TAC will be making about where we need to go in April with our water planning. So this item is a recommendation from your committee and will be forwarded to the Board of Supervisors. You recall in April, August of 2014, the board wanted to have this and any other numbers decision in Zone 3 brought to them for confirmation. So if your recommendation is positive, we would schedule this for the board as early as possible after April 1st, given the board agenda schedules and whatnot, for them to confirm your recommendation.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions from the public? I'll entertain a motion.
I move staff's recommendation of those two items.
Second.
With a motion and a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. And so future agenda items, we have a couple listed. Do committee members wish to discuss any of those?
I just had one comment as a fairly new, now 1 year member of LAFCO, Local Agency Formation Commission. Will water wheeling issues trigger any LAFCO involvement? I wouldn't think so, as long as you folks are pretty much doing it. Is that kind of the way it works?
It typically would not. There's some options in the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act approach that could, but that's long-term stuff. So the water exchanges and water wheeling through existing systems, we don't anticipate any LAFCO involvement in that.
And I shouldn't say you guys, I should say the district.
The district.
Yeah. One of the benefits that the flood control district has is it's countywide and it includes all the territories within the city.
You avoid those issues between districts. So I guess the bottom line is, in my view at this point, it doesn't. So
yeah.
No.
Insofar as whatever you can do avoids the interjurisdictional things, we're free of any additional overhead.
That's really an important timing issue. And you may have noticed that the district, because it's countywide, can create zones without LAFCO involvement. So in the North County, Zone 19 was created to manage that election up there without LAFCO's involvement, where on the district created the zone. On the county side, even though the county's countywide, if we were able to do the same work under the county heading as a county service area, we would be at LAFCO to create that.
Right. I understand that. I'm not trying to find more work for LAFCO. I'm trying to keep it away from
efficient.
LAFCO so it goes as quickly and as efficient as possible. Thank you. That's all I have.
Any other comments or questions on future agenda items? Andrea?
You know, tonight I gave you the water operations report, and I know Jill Ogren's done that as well as Mark in the past. And we've also had Joe Phillips, our assistant superintendent out at Lopez, and Craig Kessler, our chief plant operator, come and do that. So my question is, you don't have to decide this evening, whether or not you'd like Joe or Craig to come to the meetings so they have that technical information for you if you had questions, or if you're just fine with either myself or another county representative giving you that operations report. Just something to think about.
You know, my thought there, I mean, I think it's a good question because, you know, it addresses staff efficiencies and obviously if they're working overtime, they're charging. Maybe what we do is just leave that to the discretion of the TAC, because if the TAC is identifying something that's moving forward to the advisory committee that has sort of significant operating issues and the TAC thinks it's advisable for Joe or Craig to show up to help discuss those issues with the advisory committee. Mm-hmm. I think that might be informally the way to go. And if at the TAC level they're not, you know, seeing that significant operational issue, then they don't need to show up.
Okay. Yeah, I would concur. I think especially if the technical issues, if the staff can get all of those issues taken care of at the TAC level, I'm happy with just you folks showing up to give the bigger picture. I don't want to get involved in the detailed tax stuff, and that's why we have a tax. So, but insofar as tax says, yeah, we really need that additional information to reach a good policy decision or to understand the issues better, I can certainly go with that, too.
And I'm in support of that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'm fine with that, too, because we have Pablo and Jim. They've got so much experience that it really helps.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Very fortunate.
Thanks. I guess we're moving to item 10, committee member comments. I just want to make sure to thank the city of Arroyo Grande for taking the lead on the stormwater resource plan and all the agencies in support in that.
It's all Jeff.
Thank you.
No, not me, Jeff. Thank you for that, Paula.
Sure. And thank you, AG, for helping free up his time.
Oh. Yeah, we need two more of him. Poor guy.
He loves it.
All the work, she promised me.
Okay, all right. It's all on Nicole. Thank you. It's a worthwhile endeavor. We're happy to do it.
I had a comment that, I know I've just voted yes on sending this surplus water thing to the Board of Supervisors, but I just wanted to go on record in saying that most people in ag have no idea that that there is even a figure that's 4,200 acre feet, and the fact that any amount released below that downstream goes into surplus for the rest of the members of Zone 3. And when I tell people that, it's starting to be somewhat of a struggle since water is just getting, with all the droughts and everything. So I just wanted to go on record saying that some people in ag are asking, well, why isn't that our surplus water? Why doesn't ag get the bank water in the dam if they don't release it all? I didn't know what to tell them. I really don't have an answer for them in that. So I just wanted to go on record and stating that there are some folks in ag that are wondering about the so-called surplus that's in the dam.
And I think it's a valid, question. I think in the development of the scenarios that we were talking about for downstream releases and contracts, that those all have to be part of the discussion. I remember Mr. Runnels, who has since passed away, mm-hmm. was very much concentrated on that 4,200 acre feet, during his history associated with Zone 3.
Thank you.
Just a quick comment. Isn't that talking about water and water rates and so forth? Grover Beach has... forget if we're going to do it this Monday or in a very upcoming short time, going to release a water rate study contract. So we're maybe a little bit late to the table with regards to this issue, but it is coming forward again. And on a related note, obviously former city manager Bob Peralt has now retired. We do have interviews scheduled early April for a possible replacement. So more news to follow on that.
Very good.
One more thing is it becomes absolutely certain that we're going to go through 10,000 acre feet in perhaps October. I mean, as soon as we know that, we need to reach out to the ag community to make sure they're aware of what the impact is going to be. And many of them are aware that downstream release is going to be cut way back, but some are not, and I just think we need to make sure that that word gets out well ahead of time.
Any further? Final? Hearing none. Thank you very much. It's been a very productive meeting, and we're adjourned. Mm-hmm.